What's up, everybody? This is Brian here to tell you about our podcast, Bingetown TV. Our hosts include seven best friends with a love for all things television. We cover a range of genres with a focus on fantasy and sci-fi, but also dip our feet into drama, horror, comedy, and pretty much anything we think is good television. We use the traditional deep dive formula for new live shows that are released week to week, but our calling card is our Rooks and Vets and Pitchtown TV series. Rooks and Vets pairs two of our hosts that have seen a show with two of our hosts that have not seen a show. Pitchtown TV is when we have a special guest pitch us a show by having us watch the pilot and trying to convince us to watch the rest. If you're craving more content on some of your favorite TV shows, then you should listen to Bingetown TV.
Find us on our website at bingetowntv.com, the Apple Podcast app, Spotify, or wherever else you may find your podcast.
Hi, friends. The world got you down. Don't be sad. Listen to $2 Late Fee with Zach and Dustin.
$2 Late Fee is the podcast that celebrates the best decade of entertainment, the 1980s. We pick a movie and soundtrack from our youth that we loved and see if it holds up today. We also interview your favorite celebrities from that era.
All in the spirit of positivity and togetherness. Check us out at $2LateFee.com.
Joe, we have finally got here. We no longer have to hide or seek. We are at the series or season to what many people wished was the series finale, the season finale of the OC season two. Dearly beloved, first thing I have to call out, since we already did the song.
Yeah.
Brain blown that this song shows up twice in this episode.
Right?
Like,
right?
I was like, I know that it shows up at the end. And then when it started to play for Caleb's funeral, I was like, and also, side note, fits way better for Caleb's funeral than it does when it's more infamously used in this. Like, the music actually makes sense with the funeral more. We'll get into that later at the end of this episode. That's my weird hot take.
Sure.
But I have to address this out the gate. This was something that I kept to myself because I was already texting you too much of my feelings.
Yes.
I think that Sandy is making a huge mistake throughout this entire episode. And I think this whole show is making a huge mistake with the treatment of Kirsten and her alcoholism at this point, because I don't think that Kirsten is a true alcoholic. I don't think that it's a character who has this long history of alcohol abuse and this, that, and the other thing. When I'm watching this, I'm thinking that sending Kirsten to rehab is trying to fix alcoholism by just fixing the cause, or just trying to fix the problem and not the cause. Like, the issue where she started drinking, the reasons why she started drinking, has everything to do with her marriage situation, Seth running away, her father dying, all in a quick period of time. Kirsten needs therapy way more than she needs to be like shoved into a rehab in an AA system right now.
Sure.
That's my perspective. That is just my perspective of growing up with people who struggle with, there is a difference between full-blown alcoholism, the disease, where you do need to go to rehab and you need to work with that, and someone just picking up drinking. Like, Marissa needs rehab. Marissa masks every single negative situation with alcohol from like the age of 15 and on. Kirsten has never shown that except for this excessive year of bad shit happening to her and trying to cope. And it's a thin line, but I think it's an important different line to me. That was my read on it. And maybe I'm totally in the wrong here, but that's how I'm seeing it. Is like, this is not the solution to the problem, but I certainly hope it's the end of the conversation of the problem from here on out, because dear God, the Sandy and Kirsten plots were the absolute fucking dumpster fire of all of season two for me. Like Ryan, Seth, Zach, Summer, I had an up and down with some of those storylines. There was never a moment through 24 episodes where I was invested in the pair. Where I was happy with anything happening in the adults storyline this entire season.
First of all, I appreciate your insight, especially because like you have a history, you know, you have an intimate family history of folks dealing with addiction. And
I can be
alcoholism.
Wrong because I've never drank in my life. So like I'm coming from this from like the sober guy's perspective. But to me, I do think that there is a very big difference between Kirsten and Marissa in this situation.
Sure. I understand. I think you're right. I think that it sucks because I know what's going to happen next and you don't.
Yeah.
like the therapy will come as part of it.
Okay.
So like the rehab that they're sending her to, there is therapy that is like, you know, going to be part of that. So one, two, I mean, like that's also part of like, from what I understand, especially with any like, you know, inpatient rehab type situation, there is a
therapy element.
There is a therapy component of it. I've been hinting at this
all season
yeah. that like something happens at the end of this season that like, you know, the little moments where you see like Kirsten with her glass of wine, right? Like it's breadcrumbed throughout the series until we get to this part and it gets pushed over the edge because like, you know, like in any, you can't have like, you can't have a figure who you have a complicated family relationship with die unless there's like, you know, I said this to him. That was the last thing I said to him. And then he died. Right. And so then and that's what like pushes her over the edge. She already, I mean, like that's what pushes over edge, not the like, you know, getting hit by a car, hit by a truck,
and that's
kind of thing.
And I guess here's what I'll say. Her having a freak out at her father's funeral and the solution being she must be sent to rehab feels like a Caleb move more than a Sandy move. If that makes sense. You know what I mean? Like Caleb is the character that's like swift punishment. Like Caleb would do this as a punishment. Like you have embarrassed me in front of important people and thus I must send you away until you clean up your act type attitude. It doesn't feel like a Sandy move. I feel like Sandy, I don't know. It there was something about it that rubbed me the wrong way. But hey.
Well, Sandy doesn't have answers. Sandy doesn't know how to deal with this. And I think what, like, the intervention of it all, I mean, like, we're also in, like, the prime time of, like, interventions being a thing because of the A&E show, right?
Yeah.
So the intervention of it all, like when what broke me was when Ryan gets in there and is I wish that like I wish somebody got help. And
I was more broken when he went to speak and she said, don't you say a word, I let you live here. Like I was just like, okay, so Kirsten's a mean drunk too. But I just, I don't know. This really rubbed me the wrong way entirely. Like throughout the entire season, the Kirsten Sandy stuff was really an albatross on this season for me. I'm trying to go back and forth between good and bad. So that was really rough. Won't lie, loved fucking seeing Jimmy Cooper and Haley back on my TV. That was really exciting. I feel like I already spoiled for myself that Jimmy Cooper does not stick around and that it's not the Cooper family reunion that they're leaving us thinking it
they
may
think
be.
It's going to be, yeah.
Because I think when he sailed away, you were like, I don't genuinely remember if this is a serious rap on him or not, which means that he's not here very long. And I think when I Googled it, it was like, from that point, it was like 28 episodes and he was on the show for 30 episodes. So I'm like, all right, I guess we're at 29. So I guess episode one of season three is sending Jimmy Cooper off again.
Yeah.
So, you know, that is what it is. But yeah, love seeing Jimmy. That brought me a lot of joy, actually. I learned something immediately watching this episode. So I've talked about my friend Jeff, who was like kind of the first OC fan that I knew, and he had shown me a few random episodes. This, I know for a fact that this was the episode that made him an OC fan, because he...
This is the episode?
This is the episode, in the sense of what he told me was he was flipping through the channels and he saw someone, as he was randomly flipping through the channels, he saw a character reading his favorite book, Sex, Drugs, and Cocoa Puffs, and stopped and went back and was like, what? And then he just watched this episode out of context.
Oh, God.
And got like sucked in and then went out and bought the season one DVD to like get caught up on everything. But yeah, Seth, the first shot of Seth, he is reading Sex, Drugs, and Cocoa Puffs, which is also one of my top five favorite books as well. It's hard to call it a book. It's an essay collection by Chuck Klosterman about pop culture. But if you are anything like Joe and I, where you consider yourself a little bit of a snob when it comes to the art of pop culture and really trying to analyze like what is culture, I read the book it was part of my college American studies course, was that we had to read Sex, Drugs, and Cocoa Puffs and break it down. And it's just individual chapters. The first chapter is usually you'll know if you love or hate the book. And I don't know, I haven't read it in a bit, so I don't know how well it aged over the last 20 years. But the first chapter is a book about why he hates John Cusack. It's a great book. Give it a read if you care about pop culture and stuff like that. One of the chapters, he watches every season of The Real World and tries to track where the show went wrong. Spoiler alert, Puck had something to do with it. But that leads to a really adorable scene where Summer comes in to check on Seth, but under the guise that Princess Sparkle wanted to check in on Captain Oates and see how he was doing. Joe, if you had told me how many times I'd say the words Princess Sparkle and Captain Oates through the entirety of this podcast, I would not have believed you, because boy, did that feel like a throwaway plot point. But here we are, still 2 years into the show, making references to these two horses.
Yep.
I have a huge thing I need to complain about. And we've kind of hinted at complaints about this before. And I mean, it's pretty obvious to me that this is a series wrap on Trey, but I really also need it to be a series wrap on the anonymously evil Jess, who just has no character, no storyline, no importance, just kind of moves in and out of scenes, just bringing bullshit with her for like no reason. And like, I kind of ignored the Jess subplot last week because it's so much worse in this episode. But like, Joe, tell me that I never have to talk about Jess again now that Trey is dead.
Oh God, you never have to talk. Never, ever. Hold on. I have to look her up, right?
Yeah, she ran off with those drugs and just like never came back. Honestly, like, Trey is a bad dude. We're not going to sit here and pretend that Trey's not a bad dude, but if we're going to talk about who should have been shot and dead on the ground after this season, Jess is so much worse of a person than Trey is. And like, I am saying that fully aware that Trey did some fucked up shit and did some essay and all of that stuff, but Jess is worse. Because Jess is a person who finds someone like Trey and purposely calculates pressing buttons and causing and literally manipulating a person who's already unhinged to go more unhinged for their sometimes just for their entertainment. Like,
yeah,
like it is. She is a true sociopath. Like,
oh, yeah.
Like,
and like, oh, my God, the when she pulls the gun, first of all, when she pulls the gun at the drug deal. Right.
Yeah.
And the whole point of like the whole point of having the piece at the drug deal and having Trey there is because the last time someone did a deal with whoever she's doing the deal with, they like it got violent because of for whatever reason. But she's the one who pulls the gun on them.
Yeah, she escalates the situation.
Yeah.
Like,
and the interesting thing is twofold. One, she pulls the gun and she's like, you know, who's the bitch now? Which reminds me of the new guy.
A 1,000,000%. Who's the bitch now?
Who's the bitch now? And I was like, no. I was like, we can't. No, I was like, no, not a new guy reference. I know you would like that. And then secondly, she like, what did she say? She's like, go back in your rice rocket. And I was like, Jesus. Oh, Christ. No.
Oh, my God. And then actually
explicit racism. I mean, we already have the implicit racism of like, you don't see any people of color.
Yeah.
Like even Teresa, who's supposed to be like yeah, Latina,
the
right?
Most whitewashed Latina woman that has ever stepped on the screen.
Yeah.
So I guess here's the one thing. Part of me is like, I never want to think about Jess. I never want Jess to show up again. There's also a part of me, it's like, I want Jess to show up in the first season and have to literally pay for her crimes. Because otherwise, where we're at right now, this woman shows up, seduces Trey, pushes Trey all over the, causes Trey to have a relapse, gets him to do these drug deals with him, essentially leads to Trey's death. And for all of that, she gets to run away with the drugs for free. And for all we know, live a very fine, healthy, happy life in Newport Beach as like their top drug dealer. It's actually kind of a bummer that if there's no more story follow up, that she just kind of got off scot-free from this point on. And that we'll just have to assume that she's living the high life as like Newport's top dealer of all drugs.
Well, she's supposed to show up, right? So she's like, I'm going to steal my dad's Beamer.
Yeah.
And we're going to drive to Vegas. She's like 18.
Yeah.
Not maybe 17. She's still high school kid.
Yeah, she's still in high school. Which again, actually, now that you're bringing that up, Trey. Trey. What is it with you and high school girls?
I know. He turned 21.
Yeah.
But, you know.
You're a real Scott Pilgrim right now. It's not great.
Ah, yeah. Ugh. Talk about, yeah. Ooh, no. Gross.
This is a weirdly heavy episode for a season finale. Like,
yeah.
Like this is a lot.
It doubles the body count.
Doubles the body count. It's a lot. So finally Marissa tells Summer what's going on. She finally tells Summer, here's what happened. Summer tells Seth. Seth is like, we have to tell Ryan. Like, we have to tell Ryan. And Ryan does exactly what all of them expected to happen. Ryan's just like, I'm going to have to go kill my brother now. He's going to scar his brother Mufasa. Like he's ready to just take it down.
Yeah.
But then Trey is the one who escalates this shit. Because like, let's think about what would have happened if Trey doesn't pull a gun. I don't think Ryan was going to kill Trey. You know what I mean? Like, I think Ryan was going to come and beat the shit out of Trey.
Yeah.
And be like, get the fuck out of Newport. I never want to see you again. And that be the end of it. Trey pulls the gun. He is willing to kill his younger brother as opposed to essentially getting into a really rough scuffle where he'd still get to leave at the end of the day. Then the fight happens and Trey escalates it further by literally trying to choke the life out of Ryan and reaching for a telephone to bash his head in with. Like he expedites the situation to the worst way. Marissa, with an incredibly lucky kill shot from a person who I assume has never fired a gun in her life, shoots a disarming shot that takes Trey's entire life out of him. And this is where we get this weird music choice. Obviously, I know about this scene. I know about this scene because of the SNL sketch.
Yeah. Dear Sister. Which, by the way, dear listener, you can listen to my dulcet tones read an essay that I wrote about this specifically on the Geekscape YouTube channel.
Yes, you can. Look for the OC video that Joe did a while ago. But the reason why that sketch even happened, as much as this was a pop culture moment, I think it was a pop culture moment because it is a weird song choice. It is a weird, like, it's a great song. This is not a diss on Imogen Heap. This is a weird fucking usage of this song. Like, it's hard. It's a chicken or an egg situation right now, Joe, because it is actively hard for me to decide if the music choice works only because I've known about this song choice for 20 years or if it's the most insane song you could possibly put in the scene. And that's why it's so charming and strange, because it's like this would be a better place for Fix You by Coldplay. You know what I mean? Like, it's like something that's like piano and tragic and sad. And instead it's like, what you say? Like, it's the Where Are We would still have made sense in that part. It's the fact that the gunshot kicks in and it's the catchiest part.
What you say?
Ooh, that it doesn't end well.
Well, it didn't end well. No.
But it's like, whoa, what a call. Like, honestly, if she shot the gun and the Where Are We part kicked in again, I'd be like, that totally makes sense. Like, that works. It is such a weird part of the song to choose, but I also think it's why it became iconic. I think that it's impossible to separate the two. It's been forever since I listened to the Los Costarichas, like, pop culture. Did this make it onto their 100 pop culture moments list?
I think, I'm not sure actually, because they do, like, they have also like the 200, the great American.
I've listened to that recently too. Yes. It feels to me like this is worthy of like 100 pop culture moments thing. It's certainly like of the last like 20 or 30 years, an absolute like needs to be on that list. I'd even say 100 iconic moments in television. This makes it somewhere on the list. This is a thing.
Oh, absolutely.
Like, me, case in point, never really watched the OC up until now, and I knew this scene. I knew this moment. I knew this song choice.
What's up, everybody? This is Brian here to tell you about our podcast, Bingetown TV. Our hosts include seven best friends with a love for all things television. We cover a range of genres with a focus on fantasy and sci-fi, but also dip our feet into drama, horror, comedy, and pretty much anything we think is good television. We use the traditional deep dive formula for new live shows that are released week to week, but our calling card is our Rooks and Vets and Pitchtown TV series. Rooks and Vets pairs two of our hosts that have seen a show with two of our hosts that have not seen a show. Pitchtown TV is when we have a special guest pitch us a show by having us watch the pilot and trying to convince us to watch the rest. If you're craving more content on some of your favorite TV shows, then you should listen to Bingetown TV.
Find us on our website at bingetowntv.com, the Apple Podcast app, Spotify, or wherever else you may find your podcast.
Hi, friends. The world got you down. Don't be sad. Listen to $2 Late Fee with Zach and Dustin.
$2 Late Fee is the podcast that celebrates the best decade of entertainment, the 1980s. We pick a movie and soundtrack from our youth that we loved and see if it holds up today. We also interview your favorite celebrities from that era.
All in the spirit of positivity and togetherness. Check us out at $2LateFee.com.
Hey, Hey, welcome to Unstable Topics, a fast-paced, jam-packed, unhinged bestie podcast filled with facts, reacts, and made-up games in between.
We're your hosts, Sarah
and Maggie,
and we're excited for you to join our best friend hangout, where we surprise one another with things we find interesting or hilarious just to see how the other will react.
Our friendship might be totally stable, but you never know what your bestie might throw your way to knock you off your game.
So come shake things up, learn something new, and laugh along with us. This is Unstable Topics.
I was actually just telling my girlfriend this while we were driving. I was driving her home before we record it. So I have to ask, was this the first time you heard this song?
Yes.
Okay. Do you want to know where the first place I heard this song was?
Oh, God, what?
Bringing it back to Zach Braff, baby, when it was used in the movie The Last Kiss with Zach Braff and Rachel Bilson.
What?
Did you ever see that movie, The Last Kiss? It's bad.
No.
It's a bad movie, but...
Rachel Bilson from the OC? Rachel Bilson?
I'm pretty sure... Hold on a second. I might be... We were talking about a bunch of weird movies all at once. I might be combining people now. Because Rachel Bilson might be in Liberal Arts with Ted Mosby.
whoever. I know. I was like, I don't even remember his name from that.
Yeah, Rachel Bilson from the OC. So it was... So he didn't direct it. He just starred in it. But
sure.
It's basically that in the movie, he like is cheating on his pregnant wife with a younger girl played by Rachel Bilson that like he had a chance encounter with at a wedding. And this is the song that plays when he comes home from their first like hang together. And he's feeling a little guilty about everything.
Where are we?
Yep, exactly. See, the plot revolves around a young couple and their friends struggling with adulthood and issues with relationships and commitment. The film stars Zach Braff, Casey Affleck, and Rachel Bilson.
Oh my God, Casey Affleck.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a interesting, and Harold Ramis. Harold Ramis shows up in there too. It was made for a budget of $20 million and made $15.8 million in its box office run. So crushing it. But yeah, Hide and Seek by Imogen Heap. It was another one of those soundtracks where I'm pretty sure with absolutely no evidence to this, I would put money down that Zach Braff was the star of the movie as well as the soundtrack supervisor. because listen to the artists on this. Snow Patrol, Coldplay, Carey Brothers, Imogen Heap, Remy Zero, Fiona Apple, Amy Mann, and Rufus Wainwright. Like, half of those were already on the Garden State soundtrack. Yeah. The other half were on the Scrubs soundtrack. Like, this was hot off the heels of Zach Braff crushed it with that Garden State soundtrack. Can he do it again? And the answer was like, maybe.
You know, maybe.
Maybe. But speaking of music, Joe, this episode, we've joked around about this, that there's no way that we could ever pick something that isn't Hide and Seek for this episode. And I agree with you. This is the song of the episode. That being said, this episode had a ton of great songs in it.
You're like, but there was all this other shit.
Yeah, so I really, more than ever, I want to call out these other songs. We had El Mañana by the Gorillaz playing when Marissa and Julie are having a conversation before the funeral. Crosses by Jose Gonzalez plays when Summer is visiting Seth. Hide and Seek by Imogen Heap plays both at Caleb's funeral and in the final scene. You're Not the Law by the Dead 60s plays when Jess shows up at the bait shop. An Honest Mistake by the Bravery plays when Seth, Ryan, and Marissa show up at the bait shop. Hot Ride by the Prodigy plays when the drug deal goes bad. Friends by Ryan Adam plays when Haley drives Kirsten home from the spa. El Mañana made me get so excited because that is off of arguably the Gorillaz' best album, Demon Days. This soundtrack, this is the OC that I think of when I think of the OC, this collection.
You think of Imogen Heap.
Yeah. Like, but all of those, like I think of Imogen Heap. Yeah. I think of the Gorillaz. I think of the Bravery. I think of Prodigy. Like I think of artsy, indie bands and like offshot techno groups and stuff. Like, I think of all of that. Ryan Adams, like that whole folk indie scene, I think of.
Songs that aren't like songs that have at the time really little to no mainstream popularity, but they're fun. And it's that because it's that beautiful moment. I'll speak from my experience. It's that beautiful moment where you're like listening to a song that you know nobody, no one near you in your like proximity of friends or family or whatever likes or knows about the music, but like you love it so much, and it's like, oh my god, this is like the thing that I really think. Like, that was for me when I listened to, when I watched Garden State.
Yeah,
Garden State was one of the first like quote unquote indie movies that I ever watched, and like listening to like the Garden State soundtrack, I'm like, oh my god, like this is, I can't believe.
Look,
not more people know about like, you know, Let Go,
or Colin Hay for me, man. Like, Colin Hay is now one of my favorite artists, and I found him through the Garden State soundtrack. And this is a guy who was the lead singer of Men at Work. Like he had previously had a massive career, and like Zach Braff kind of revived that through Scrubs and Garden State. Look, a lot of Garden State is like everyone's favorite indie movie to dunk on as being like the indie movie that ruined indie movies. I still love it, but I will not, and I mean not, stand for anyone besmirching that soundtrack. That is still a perfect mixtape of the 2000s indie music scene in like a concise 13 track release. The closing track of that album, by the way, sung by one of Ross's girlfriends on Friends. All right, Joe, let's talk pop culture right now.
Yeah, so, you know, folks, Merry Christmas Eve to all of you. This has been like, I mean, if you want to talk about like the queerest moments of 2023, it was like starting this podcast with Matt. And like, it's been really strange to be like, oh, fuck, we did like the first two seasons of this show.
In a year. And that was with like a 2 to 3 week break when your computer died.
Yeah, I know. Like, we're,
if folks, that hadn't happened, we'd be in the third season right now.
Yeah, we would be in the third season, but you know, I think the timing is perfect. Things do happen for a reason. Mm-hmm. And what is my like final pop culture moment of 2023 going to be? Well, I'm gonna end it with something Christmassy.
Ooh.
And I have to tell you, it's not, by the way, it is not going to be Matt Rogers' Have You Heard of Christmas, although by this time I will have seen it. It is going to be the Cher Christmas album, simply titled Christmas.
Did that come out this year also?
It came out this year, earlier this month. And the like, it is exactly what you expect. The first song is called DJ Play a Christmas Song.
Love it. Let me ask you.
DJ Play a Christmas Song. I wanna be dancing all night long.
I need to ask you a very quick question, because if not, I have something for you to also listen to. Does she cover Baby Please Come Home?
Hold on. That one is like, the snow's coming down.
Yeah, that one.
That one, she does.
Okay, so one of the albums that we covered this year on Christmas 365, Dylan made me listen to A Very Rosy Christmas, which was Rosie O'Donnell's Christmas album. And the second track is Cher and Rosie O'Donnell covering Christmas Baby Please Come Home, like fresh off the heels of Believe. So it is like full late 90s, early 2000s club track with Cher's "The Snow's Coming Down."
I watch it evolve.
But she's like super auto-tuned, and like Rosie's doing the like Christmas.
Christmas.
Which, side note, all joking aside, that song fucking rules. That is easily one of the 10 best Christmas songs of all time. It's so good. There's not a bad cover of Christmas Baby Please Come Home. It's so perfect.
Yeah.
Anyway, sorry, continue. So Cher hit. Okay, so Cher
has a Christmas album. It's gonna, I fully expect to be at a gay bar and hear it. I was at a gay bar last night and I did not hear it. There was also just like a bunch of bear Santas around me. I was like, it was one of those moments where I was like, am I not as in tune to homosexuality in this city as I am? Because like, I feel like I would know there are a bunch of like, you know, burly Santas wearing harnesses doing like a pub crawl tonight.
I did not realize. I just imagined teddy bears, like Christmas teddy bears. Because I'm like, okay, yeah. I mean, I guess I could see people dressed as bears. Like, it's Christmas time. Why not? In a gay club? Why not? Like, that would be great. All right. So I'm not going to talk about something Christmassy, but what I will talk about is probably the most obscure movie that I would put on my best films of 2023 list.
Okay.
Did you watch Pinball, the Man Who Saved the Game?
No.
Okay.
No, that sounds like an off-brand like Hellraiser.
Now you'd think, right? So Pinball, the Man Who Saved the Game, I believe it's on Hulu. It is 80 minutes. It's a brisk watch. It is a fascinating biopic of the true story of the man who saved pinball. Now, I've known this story for a long time because I've been a fan of playing pinball, and a lot of my friends, including my friend Jeff, who was the person who introduced the OC into my life because of the Sex, Drugs, and Cocoa Puffs book. He's like one of the highest ranked U.S. pinball players. So I have these friends who love pinball and they love the history of pinball. In the 50s, I guess it was the 40s, 50s, and early 60s, pinball was banned in major cities because it was considered gambling. It was considered a form of gambling and a game of luck. And Pinball, the Man Who Saved the Game, is the story of this guy who loved pinball so much that he went in front of the Supreme Court of New York and brought a pinball machine and proved that it wasn't a game of luck. It was a game of skill by playing a game for the court and calling every shot and proving that with like time and practice, it is a skill that you can master like anything else. But the way that they like juggle the story and they jump back and forth between time of him like sharing these old memories. And it's just, it reminded me a lot of like American Splendor, the way that the American Splendor movie was assembled. But it's just brisk. It's enjoyable. You're kind of like invested very quickly into the characters and the story. And it's made on a very low budget, but it doesn't feel like it's a low budget movie. So highly recommend, go check that out. And, you know, take a break. We're going to take a rest. You guys take a rest. And in 2024, we'll be back watching season 3 of the OC. And I mean, we're already past the halfway point, Joe. This time next year, we're not going to be talking about the OC anymore. Will we still be a show? Who knows? Will we be talking about some other show with some white ass people problems? Who knows? Only time will tell. So stay tuned.
What's up, everybody? This is Brian here to tell you about our podcast, Bingetown TV. Our hosts include seven best friends with a love for all things television. We cover a range of genres with a focus on fantasy and sci-fi, but also dip our feet into drama, horror, comedy, and pretty much anything we think is good television. We use the traditional deep dive formula for new live shows that are released week to week, but our calling card is our Rooks and Vets and Pitchtown TV series. Rooks and Vets pairs two of our hosts that have seen a show with two of our hosts that have not seen a show. Pitchtown TV is when we have a special guest pitch us a show by having us watch the pilot and trying to convince us to watch the rest. If you're craving more content on some of your favorite TV shows, then you should listen to Bingetown TV.
Find us on our website at bingetowntv.com, the Apple Podcast app, Spotify, or wherever else you may find your podcast.
Hi, friends. The world got you down. Don't be sad. Listen to $2 Late Fee with Zach and Dustin.
$2 Late Fee is the podcast that celebrates the best decade of entertainment, the 1980s. We pick a movie and soundtrack from our youth that we loved and see if it holds up today. We also interview your favorite celebrities from that era.
All in the spirit of positivity and togetherness. Check us out at $2LateFee.com.
You're listening to the Geekscape Network.